Welcome to this week's Podcast with a K, available on iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo.
The Podcast with a K, with Christian Colley, James McLean, and Brian Terranova.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Podcast with a K. I'm Christian Colley. With me is James McLean and Brian Terranova. Say hello, guys.
Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Guys, it's guys. You missed the guys.
He did.
Why?
Always.
I don't do guys. Guys is just far guys. Too American for me.
Hey, guys. Come on,
what would you
guys.
Like, dudes? Hello,
dudes. I hate it in animations, in cartoons, where they go, guys. That really, really, I don't know why. It just resonates. It doesn't resonate. What is it when it resonates in a bad way?
Yeah, it detonates.
I detonate as soon as any toy merchandise based cartoon has guys. I don't know why. It's just too friendly. I can just almost hear the writers trying to make the characters sound like they're friends, and that really just you don't need it.
Yeah,
people don't say that. I hope they don't say. Do they say guys in America, Brian? Is that really?
People use guys a lot here, yeah.
Oh, it's a shame. Yeah.
One of the newest things too is well, I'm not even sure how to even relate it. It's just one of those internet shorthand things that, like, when you're excited about something and you want the world to know that you're excited about it, you share a link on social media and just put "you guys!" exclamation point, and that's it. And like, we're supposed to know what the hell that means. So yeah, it gets used everywhere.
Oh, disgusting.
Yes.
Do you know what also is disgusting? I'm looking at a DVD.
Like some sort of literary. We are the Fran Laurie literary snobs. That's what's happening right here.
Absolutely. Me even more so, because I obviously have snobbish attitudes against northern people like you. So I sort of.
Ah, yuck.
Like, even though I come from the north. Not that I know how to speak it, but I did. I was just going to say, what's really annoying me at the moment, and if you're going to be joining us in this. Are we doing the commentary one now?
No.
No. I can't get myself out of
Damn
this
it.
One. Reel me back.
So in next week's
Just
podcast...
Don't tell me I have to take the DVD out again. That's all I'm saying.
In next week's podcast, which we'll be recording shortly, you'll be able to hear us discussing the Curse of Fenric Special Edition, to which James was about to refer.
Yeah, but I'll wait a week. So if you guys can just hold on a week.
Okay, yeah.
I'm talking about something to do with a DVD screen on Curse of Fenric, which is really upsetting me.
Okay.
And next week you'll find out what it is.
I'll
give
tuned.
You a clue. It is the chapter screen as well.
So stay tuned for that. Same pod time, same pod channel. Listen, have you seen this picture of Jenna Coleman as Queen Victoria?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, you haven't seen that? You should have a look at that. She's quite stunning as Queen Victoria. Because, you know, most people remember Queen Victoria. I mean, I may be wrong here, but most people think of Queen Victoria as a mad old woman. I particularly think of Queen Victoria as Miriam Margolyes in Blackadder's Christmas Carol. With Prince Albert as Jim Broadbent. That's how I think of Queen Victoria. I never think of Queen Victoria as being as beautiful as Jenna Coleman is.
It's amazing how much she looks like Jenna Coleman wearing a crown.
It is. This.
You know what's incredible about this photo, though? It actually looks like that little tuft of black that's in the white fur section of the crown. It looks like it's her hair sticking out there. It looks like she's improperly dressed, like somebody needs to fix that for her. But I know what it is, but it just looks wrong.
That doesn't it?
That is
yeah.
Great. Yeah, you're right, man. It does. Actually, I wasn't really, but I mean, we'll have a quick chat about that. Yeah, so there's a new clip being released about from Victoria, which is the name of this series, about Queen Victoria. Prince Albert's played by Tom Hughes, and Jenna Coleman is playing the former Empress of the British Empire, Queen Victoria, which kicks off later this year. But I wasn't actually going to talk about that. What I was actually going to talk about, and I was looking on the DoctorWhoCompanion.com, which is an excellent website. Which we have a vague link to, two-thirds of us, anyway, was Peter Capaldi in the ballot for Best Actor Emmy, which was quite cool, but just it's just a ballot, though. It's not an actual nomination, is it? There's 109 people in the ballot, including people such as Timothy Dalton, Hugh Bonneville, Tom Ellis, to name but three. Michael Sheen, even. Loads of Who-related people in there. He deserves a nomination, though, doesn't he, Capaldi, for Heaven Sent?
Sorry, what was the question?
Does he not deserve...
So, did you just ask us if he has one or if it's a good thing?
No, well, it's not a nomination at this stage. It's a ballot. So there's 109 names.
Oh, right, yes.
And then it goes to some sort of committee, like a BAFTA over here. And then they sort of, like, whittle it down into a bunch, probably four names.
Gotcha.
So,
well, they couldn't have picked a better episode for him, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. What do you think, James?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I was thinking, you know, there's a lot of good acting out there, but I mean, it is an episode of drama which he had to hold entirely himself, if you talk about that specific episode,
totally, yeah.
Which you need to have a strong, and of course he narrated it as well. Mm. So, you know, I think he had a strong involvement in it. So, yeah, I think he should maybe be put forward for that over James Corden or someone like that.
He doesn't do much acting these days either, of course, and he's more of a chat show host.
Absolutely, but he's done film stuff before.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Now, she's got contacts on, isn't she? She's got brown eyes.
I was wondering that, too.
Oh, Jenna Coleman again.
Yeah.
Yes, she could be. Yes. Listen, with Capaldi, I'm looking at the comments here, and someone's mentioned The Leftovers, which, as we may know, Christopher Eccleston is in. Have you guys seen that?
I've not. Is he exiting it, did I read somewhere? Is he?
I'm not sure.
I have not seen it.
Well, that is just this podcast over and over, isn't it? No knowledge whatsoever.
Christ, it's like amateur hour, isn't it?
Yeah.
Amateur 20. Dear listener, you should have heard us dealing with the DVD selection earlier. If you want,
for next
amateur
week.
Hour. Yeah, for earlier on for next week. Yeah,
because some of us don't know what DVDs they have, right?
Next week, you'll find out which one. Which one of us doesn't know what DVDs we had.
It's or where exciting... they are.
Hold on for 5 days or so, 7 days, you'll find the answers.
Do you know? Do you know, I got to be honest, I don't really follow a lot of actors to other projects. I am more interested in watching projects if they're subject matters that I'm interested in. So something like Christopher Eccleston doing the TV show you just mentioned, which I've already forgotten the name, I would really check it out just merely because he's in it. I would need to know more about it, and to be perfectly honest, it's the first time I've heard of it, kind of thing, you know?
Well, I'll tell you what, another thing that Eccleston, and he's been a busy guy of late, because there was a show called Safe House, which has recently been announced that it's coming back for a second series. Patterson Joseph was also in it, and then more recently it's been announced that the second series won't have Eccleston in it.
Probably what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, which is quite strange so it was announced that he was going to be in it, and then it's been announced that he's not in it. They basically started from scratch with basically the same title, completely different set of characters, and probably a slightly similar scenario because it's about a guy running a safe house. But another show that he was in was The A Word, which was a BBC drama. It's coming on BBC America in July. It's about a family who have a 5-year-old who is diagnosed as being autistic. And this was on a few months ago in the UK on BBC. It was a really good show, and Eccleston was really good in that. Now, strangely enough, I'd completely forgotten about Safe House. When I heard that Eccleston wasn't being retained for a second series, I thought they were talking about the A Word, which seemed bizarre because pretty much there's three main characters in the A Word: the grandfather, the father of the boy, and the boy himself. They're sort of like the three key characters. So to lose a sort of key character that events revolve around seemed a bit strange to me. But no, if you haven't seen The A Word, do get to... Eccleston's really good in it. My mini review for you. It's all right.
Good.
Yeah.
You'll do that.
Yeah. Well, I do tend to do little mini reviews for stuff. So there you go. Listen, guys, I was watching...
Guys again.
Yeah, hey guys, you guys, fellow podcasters, have we talked about Captain America: Civil War?
Should we have?
No,
probably not.
I wondered if we had or not, because we talked about Ant-Man and we talked about the third Iron Man film, and I wondered if we talked about Civil War.
I don't remember discussing that, no.
Okay, because I remember we did talk about
Ant-Man. We definitely did not talk about that.
Right. We did talk about Ant-Man, though, didn't we? And we all thought we were all kind of surprised by Ant-Man.
I do remember this, yes.
Yeah.
Especially me, I hasn't seen it, so I was particularly surprised to have enjoyed it.
Have you seen Civil War?
Yes.
Yes. How do you feel about Civil War?
I mean, obviously, I'm keen to compare it to the Batman film, since they obviously play very similar trends, and I really enjoyed it.
Okay,
it was perfect.
Seen Batman Superman yet? Unfortunately.
Oh wow! No, it's not unfortunate. That's not unfortunate at all. That's good.
Okay,
that's a good place to be.
What about you, Brian?
excuse me. Sorry, I am keen to compare it to the previous Avengers movie. Even though I know it's Captain America, it still comes out like another Avengers one, and I have to say, it was brilliant in comparison to the previous Avengers movie. I liked it. I had a lot of fun with it. I was really glad to see that. It seems like the Captain America series is one of the stronger trilogies that they have going for the individual
really
superheroes.
Surprising, because I really had no love of Captain America at all. I mean, I mean, he is essentially a patriotic symbol like Superman, and that they sort of lack a certain...
Yeah.
But again, Marvel did very well, and they cast the right person,
and
they took the right approach on it, and it worked really well. So I was very surprised to have watched all three and really liked that series. I agree with you. I think they've been very good.
I prefer the Winter Soldier movie, I think. I did enjoy the third one, though. There was times when I thought it was maybe heading in slightly kind of predictable territory.
I think it suffered from, you could tell that there was a lot of politics that it was straining it. I mean, is it Black Panther or Black Cat? I can't remember which it's Black Panther.
Yeah.
Is very, you can feel that they're very uncertain what to do. He feels like a Venom, you know, for the Spider-Man 3. You can tell that he's been put in fairly late and he takes up a lot of time. And they've said, you know, since obviously it was, they didn't think they had Spider-Man at the time. So they gave him more focus, and then they did have Spider-Man, but they didn't want to take his focus away. And you kind of feel there's a bit of uncertainty. There's a lot of stuff juggling around there. But yeah, I think it's certainly worked better than Batman and Superman. And it was Kevin Smith sort of said, I think it's Kevin Smith who said, you know, that, which is a film if you really wanted to see what Batman and Superman were like if they were complete assholes. That is perfect. Yeah, it's very true. So.
Now, one of the reasons I wanted to get onto this was because of Spider-Man.
Okay.
Because obviously we have a very big Spider-Man fan in our midst.
And who could that be?
I'm not sure. I think it's James.
Yeah.
And
yeah, probably.
I genuinely don't know who is. Can we find out next week?
And
next week you'll find out.
This is our third movie Spider-Man, and I wondered how Brian felt about this particular characterization, because to me it feels more like. My Spider-Man knowledge is limited, but it feels more like late 80s, early 90s comic book Spider-Man.
All right, well, okay. I have to say, and I may have said this before in a previous podcast, but I was a very big fan of Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man, and I felt that it's very difficult to bring Spider-Man as a teenager into today's world in the same way that they brought him in the 60s, because the things that made him get bullied are not things that people really get bullied for anymore. They're actually things that make people cool now, which is even a completely different experience to when I was a kid. I got bullied for all the same things that Peter had gotten bullied for. You know, so that's one of the reasons why I always identified and related to him. So bringing Garfield in the way they did, I thought it was a pretty wise idea, and I thought he played the character well, and he brought the humor back to the character, which was missing in the Tobey films. They had the humor around the character, but not in the character. mostly, they had a little bit. But watching just, what did he have, like 20 minutes of screen time in Civil War?
Yeah.
Tom Holland just really won me over. I mean, he was great. I thought he nailed everything. I mean, I loved during the fight scene, all the, it wasn't even so much banter. Some of it was, but it wasn't the banter, which I'm hoping we'll get a lot of the banter in his solo films. But just his childlike wonder, you know, when the Winter Soldier punches at Spider-Man and he catches his arm, and Spidey's just like flipping out like, dude, you've got a metal arm. That's so cool. You know, like that's Spider-Man. That's Peter Parker. But even in that scene, it did two things in that moment. It showed how funny Peter can be, just how many asides he can do during a fight, you know, rather than just focus on the fight. but it also showed his strength, because here you had the Winter Soldier throwing everybody around like rag dolls for most of the film. And then in 2 seconds, Spider-Man catches his arm, and the look on the Winter Soldier's face as this happens is just sheer shock that somebody can do that to him. So it really did a lot. And then, of course, having Iron Man come to his house knowing about his tech capabilities, that got the third check mark in there. So having him play the character so silly, funny, and also shy, like a teenager would be, and like a teenage Peter Parker was, I really just think they nailed a hell of a lot of the character. I was really pleased.
You see, I had a problem because my favorite Spider-Man, as is many people's, is Nicholas Hammond in the 1979 or thereabouts TV show. And I was very disappointed that they didn't have like a 34-year-old man playing a 16-year-old with uncontrollable hair. I was hoping that he would be silent through all his battles and twitchy, and they would just recycle various shots of him spinning a web and swinging around the same post. I thought that'd be brilliant if they'd just done exactly the same thing.
Ejaculating rope from his wrist as well.
Ejaculating rope, yes. Absolutely.
And fighting ninjas,
yeah. That's not the same guy, though, is it? Because I was reading up about this, and apparently Japan had its own Spider-Man show, didn't it?
They did.
Well, yeah. They did, but there were ninjas in the Spider-Man TV show that they did with Hammond.
I've never rewatched those. So I remember Spider-Man on a bridge getting hit by some sort of throwing star and falling off the bridge.
Yeah, that's in the one where he goes to
Japan.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Japanese one is very good. Actually, it's very Japanese in the sense he's got his own mecha that comes along and turns into a giant robot, which takes on various things. It has so many of those sort of tropes. It's very much Power Rangers and the Saban Rider sort of thing. But it is, Stan Lee always said that was more his vision of Spider-Man, I think, than the Nicholas Hammond one was, which is very down to earth. But
they recently brought that Spider-Man into the comic books as well, the Japanese one.
Did they? Really?
Yeah, they did a series called Spider-Verse, where Spider-Man went... Basically, Spider-Man was being hunted. All the different Spider-Man versions and Spider-People, various, were being hunted all throughout the various multiverse from alternate realities and so on. And one of them was the Japanese Spider-Man.
Did they do the American 1990s cartoon Spider-Man, who had his last episode chatting to Stan Lee? That was always a bit of a downer.
I believe that they had the 90s one in. I'm trying to remember reading back to it. They for sure had the 60s Spider-Man cartoon in there. They had Spider-Man and Friends in there, which they got brutally murdered. Spoiler alert for anybody who may be wanting to read that still.
Harsh. I like them.
Yeah, that's how I felt too. But it was actually, it made a hell of a lot of sense, because if you look at that cartoon, they were always very, everything was very light and funny in that world. And the villains were really just jokes, and the heroes just kind of like knocked them out and tied them up kind of thing. But the threats that they were dealing with.
That's
right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And the threats that they were dealing with in these worlds were very, like, they were just brutal killers. So these heroes, the way that they had dealt with it was those three, Spider-Man, Iceman, and Firestar, didn't know how to deal with this thing because they'd never seen such brutality before. So they kept the universes as childlike friendly as it was in the cartoon. So that made it kind of interesting that they just made these alternate realities actually be what they were.
So they killed off the characters from the cartoon universe. So that technically sort of has a sort of canonicity to that cartoon.
Exactly. I mean, that's what they did. They basically took every version of Spider-Man ever, even Spider-Woman, Spider-Girl, all these different versions, all these different characters, including 2099 Spider-Man, Superior Spider-Man, everything, brought them all together for this storyline. And everyone that they could that wasn't tied up with rights issues, like, for instance, they couldn't use the Spider-Boy or Super Spider, whatever he was, from when DC and Marvel converged and did Amalgam Comics. They couldn't use that because it was kind of tied up with joint rights. They also couldn't use Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield, but it was really kind of cool what they did, which they had a comic panel where our Spider-Man was talking with another Spider-Man about their lives. And basically you were trying to, the point of the panel was they had these two talking about how their lives were so similar and they couldn't find any differences until you see one of them take their gloves off and you notice that the alternate reality Spider-Man is still married to Mary Jane, where our Spider-Man isn't. But aside from that, they were having this little conversation that they were like, you know, it's so crazy seeing all these different versions of us. Some of them don't even look like us. I saw one guy who was in that Seabiscuit movie. And then they said the other one, like, I saw that other guy from that social networking film, too. And so they didn't have them in there, but they referenced them. And I thought that was really a nice nod. A little off the track there.
It is. What is this podcast all about, eh?
Well, hey, because we can wind this back in two ways, okay? The first way, okay. Is Spider-Man is in the Marvel Universe, as we know, and so is the Doctor.
Yeah, that's a weak way, but let's see the next one.
We've got the Doctor Who comic strip from the 1990s, and Death's Head was created for the Transformers comic strip, and he went after the Doctor.
Fantastic Four, yeah.
Fantastic Four, top of the Baxter building at the end of Death's Head, a discussion with the Doctor, Seventh Doctor, who we might be looking at next week. So we could wind it back to Doctor Who that way. We could also wind it back to Doctor Who, because we were having an email conversation a few days ago, weren't we, about Captain America. Yeah, and how the current Captain America comic strip has had Captain America be unveiled against, like, 90-odd years of whatever, of continuity, has been a Hydra agent. And I basically said, well, this is like the Doctor being a Dalek, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we can also wind it back that way.
Yeah, and I say the Doctor is essentially the Dalek, or the genesis of the Dalek, which I think is a very pertinent point.
Do you want to expand on that for the
listeners? Well, yeah, the point. I mean, I think your words in the email was that, you know, it'd be like he was the creator of the Daleks or something. And I said, yes, well, you know, technically he's more the creator of the Daleks in some respects than Davros, because he knowingly creates the legacy of the Daleks, while Davros creates on his own ideology, which in Genesis of the Daleks, to be fair, is quite different to his megalomania that sort of surfaces later on. Mm. He is very much tied up into his war, into sort of winning the war in his own sort of brutal genetic project. But the Doctor knows what they're going to do. He knows who they're going to kill. Or he may not specifically, well, he knows some of them who they're going to kill, but he knows they're going to actually wipe out large races by saving them. He knows that individuals that he'll never have met, families will be torn apart by these creatures. And yet he allows them to genesis. And this is before we get to the silly meeting young Davros thing.
But at the same time, there's unions that will be created to fight the Daleks, isn't there? Which is his argument at the time in Genesis.
Yeah, but I always think that that's a very weak argument. That's the argument of generals. It's not the argument of the person who actually suffers. It's the argument of the person who sits out, fighting the war from the battle, from his tent, you know, 20 miles behind the battle line, that, you know, this will do great good for the various country that they support, while the people fighting would have probably been okay with it, you know, if they hadn't had the war, and are, you know, their families have been ripped apart by it. And it kind of feels that sort of argument of ideology rather than practicality.
You're painting the Doctor as General Kitchener now.
I'm painting, I think it is. It is a moment in Doctor Who which I think has far more profound character consequences than the, you know, I know Moffat tried to pick up a bit of this in the recent season, and I know it's been picked up before in various comics, I'm sure, and books, but I think it is quite a shocking moment where you perpetuate a legacy on those grounds, that they might, you know, that you don't want to kill off a race, you don't want to commit genocide, and B, you'd justify that by saying, well, some people may benefit from it. And you think, well, yeah, you think of the atrocities in our history. I mean, you go back to the Second World War, atrocities on everyone's side, and you can't sort of say to the families it would, you know, who suffered so horrendously from that, and go, well, yeah, you know, in the end, it brought a more stable Europe. And it's like, well, I'm sure that they didn't want to have to go through the pain and terrors of camps and all sorts for the benefit of future people having a better Europe. It doesn't equate. So I think it's a very bad moment for the Doctor. I mean, it's an interesting moment that they wrote. I do kind of feel they glossed over it. They glossed over that ramification.
It's interesting when you mentioned Davros and how he's less megalomaniacal, because I've often thought the reason for this is because in Genesis of the Daleks, he's basically in charge and he's in control. In all these other appearances, he's not in control, is he, in the same way? He doesn't have that level of control. He doesn't have like free reign, carte blanche to do what he wants. He's either got the Daleks against him, or he's got some sort of external body against him, or he's fighting, or he's been rescued by the Daleks, whatever. He never has that element of control again, does he?
No. I mean, this is, I mean, the point I remember picking up, it was one of Alan Stevens' points that he made, was, you know, how different Davros is in Genesis to the others. And I think he's right. At the same time, I think, as you say, there are sort of differences, as you'll find that most megalomaniacs aren't megalomaniacs when they're within a political infrastructure that they're working within, which he is in Genesis. He only breaks it at the very end when he takes control and wipes out the opposing side. But before that, he is sitting within a political infrastructure, and you can't be, as you say, a megalomania when you're having to, you know, you're not, when you're in control, or not necessarily in control, but you're within a system. By the time you get to Destiny, he's out of a system. There's no system left. He is sort of, as you say, on his own, and he is perpetually after that. So his the landscape is simpler, isn't it? The landscape of Destiny onwards for him is a simpler world. It's a more black and white world than having to maneuver quite. I don't know, maybe not, maybe so.
No, it's worth pointing out. Okay, let's move on.
Well, you know, like the 80s, it was all like Transformers, or at least they were here. I don't know how big they were there in the 80s.
Yeah, they were quite big here, but we didn't have the full range due to, I don't know, due to some monopoly rules or something like that. So, you know, things like Fortress Maximus and Omega Supreme and those really big pieces we didn't get. And we also didn't get Triptychon, we didn't get Shockwave, we didn't get Reflector, we didn't get most of the Insecticons, we only got three of them. We only got four Dinobots.
Huh.
It's ridiculous.
That's pretty bad right there.
Sunstreaker was incredibly rare, although he was available. It was really, really rare. But yeah, we didn't get a swoop of the Dinobots. We only just got the four Earthbound Dinobots. It really annoyed the shit out of me as a kid, I have to tell you. I used to pore over the little leaflets that you get with your box Transformer to look at all the other pieces, to identify which ones I could get and which ones weren't available. What about a quick-changing Time Lord figure?
Wow. It would all have to be the Doctor, because he's the only one we ever saw in the 80s. Oh, yeah! Oh, yes, you could totally do that. You could make it be, like, the third to fourth Doctor or something like that, or maybe even the fourth to the fifth, but it'll be one of those ones where if you squeeze the legs, the head flips from hiding in the chest, you know, the other one, you know how you have those toys, you squeeze the legs and the head spin around, one of those things. Because, I mean, you know, like, that's what the 80s were. You wouldn't have something cool like what we have now. You'd have that, and it have to have that. I remember that we had superheroes over here that if you squeeze the arms of the Flash, his legs would run, but if you squeeze the arms of the other characters, they were all punching fists, you know?
Yeah. There was what were they called? I can't remember what they were called. Around the same time that there was, remember Battle Armor He-Man?
Yes.
And you'd smack his chest and the new chest would roll into place with the dents in. There was another toy that came out around the same time, and that would have a head that would flip out of the chest. But I can't remember what that was called. You couldn't get it here, even though we saw adverts for it. Well, you couldn't get it up here in the northeast anyway. I can't remember what that was called, but I really fancied one at the time, but we couldn't get one.
Huh. How did you know about all of these things then, if you couldn't get them? Like,
well, what it is living in the northeast, we often didn't see toys.
It's like, how did you actually figure these things existed?
But also, I also had friends who joined high school who lived overseas, or I worked with a guy who lived overseas as well, later at college. So they used to tell us about the toys that they got. I had a guy who was usher at our wedding. He lived in, it was either Singapore or Hong Kong or whatever, but he had virtually every Transformer going. He had like even Transformers that weren't even out in the USA.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, like proper Japanese things that weren't even.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That were like Transformers, like a year before they got repackaged by Hasbro as Transformers. Huh. You know, so that sort of thing. It's a good job I got married, otherwise I'd have just had a house full of Transformer toys.
I am right now, I'm selling all my Doctor Who figures.
Right.
And I've sold a couple props, just things like either I had duplicates of or things that were like, you know, why did I ever buy this one in the first place? Because, you know, there were some props that I wanted, and there were some props that I was just like, oh, somebody made that. Well, I'll buy one.
Yeah.
And then like later on, you're like, why did I do that? I don't know. So for the move, I am trying to make some money because I don't know what the job situation is going to be like straight off the bat. So trying to sell all the Doctor Who figures. And I know exactly how you feel. Like, thank God you did get married. Otherwise, you would have half sold them. Because what I'm sitting here thinking is, it's like, I remember when they were all on the shelf and they just looked a mess. Like 200 some odd figures on a shelf is never going to look good, you know, especially open. And so one set just sold. Hopefully I'll move more because I really just want them gone, because I knew I was never going to display them again. You know, it was fun having them, but then all of a sudden it was like, well, it's not fun having them. So
did you unbox all of them?
Yeah.
Okay.
I unboxed everything. I put them all on the shelf. You know, to me it was like, I want to play with them. I want to see them properly. I don't want to just hold the toy package kind of thing, you know. And I know that not everybody's that way, but I just, that was what I wanted. But people will still want them that way, especially since they're kept in pristine condition, and people would display them the way that I do too. But I'm not sure that people want to pay the prices that I think they're worth right now. So I'm going to slowly lower them if I have to. But one of them sold at the prices I'm asking, so I'm just hoping people are waiting till like the last day of the auction to bite.
Right. Okay.
Go on.
I was going to say what I sold was Lego.
Okay.
So if you have any Lego from when you were a kid, it sells for about the same monetary price that it did when it was bought. So say you got a Lego kit that was like $50, it'll sell for $50 now.
Instead of being worth more.
It'll probably be worth more. It'll probably sell for more than $50. It's not that it's not worth more, is it? Because you've got inflation, so it's maintained its value. But I'm talking like 13 years ago, 12 years ago, when I did this. And, you know, I was selling like space Lego for like 40, 50 pounds a box. And that's how much my mum and dad paid for it. Possibly even a bit less than that. So, if you've got Lego and it's complete, then it sells.
Well, that's nice to know. The only thing Lego I have right now is the Millennium Falcon. And I don't think I want to get rid of that yet.
You've got Millennium Falcon?
Yeah.
When from what year?
Well, this is one of the more recent releases. Oh, maybe I got it maybe three years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's nice, though. It's fun. Yeah.
So that's all from us for this week. We'll be back next time, and we'll have a commentary for you. Until next week, it's goodbye.